Egg.
The Mystery Night.
A light summer rain was falling as Dunk and Egg took their leave of Stony Sept. Dunk rode his old war horse Thunder with Egg beside him on the spirited young palfrey he'd named Rain, leading their mule Maester. On Maester's back were bundled Dunk's armor and Egg's books, their bedrolls, tent, and clothing, several slabs of hard salt beef, half a flagon of mead, and two skins of water. Egg's old straw hat, wide-brimmed and floppy, kept the rain off the mule's head. The boy had cut holes for Maester's ears. Egg's new straw hat was on his own head, except for the ear holes. The two hats looked much the same to Dunk. Welcome.
To the Mystery Night. We did it.
The last Dunk and Egg book published. Dunk and Egg, the TV series, begins filming this year. Mm-hmm. Further confirmed by that same conference we watched HBO talk about the Potter series on.
Mm-hmm.
Talks of the nine voyages of Corlys Velaryon.
Mm-hmm.
Animated series. E.T. lands that may have a budget too big for HBO at this time. Yeah. Currently do.
And if HBO doesn't have the budget.
At this point, yeah. But Sports Illustrated being canceled and traditional media folding. A little bittersweet.
It is.
Starting the last book.
It is. It is bittersweet. I feel so excited because the vibes are set really high at the beginning of the chapter.
You like the head on the spike.
Why are there always dead people?
At the beginning of these books?
At the beginning of these books.
Mm. Sir Arlen, like, yeah. The guys in the cages, this Septon.
It's like the first two paragraphs, we have to cross a dead body before we can enter into
the new land.
Yeah, the new story. So it's exciting. It's bittersweet. Like, I feel kind of sad, but I feel like these first couple pages, we probably met the Mystery Knight. We've got a fairly jarring turn of events in where we're going to go. And I'm excited.
What were you expecting based off of our experience in the last one, knowing that there was a third one? I know on the last podcast we were talking about potentially jumping forward in time, maybe already being at the wall. So based off of the chunk that we read right now, we ended in about like 15, 20 pages in.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what do you think that this story is going to shape up to be?
I mean, I knew the wall was wishful thinking. Like, I wanted it to be true, you know, and maybe it still will be, but I knew it was wishful thinking. There's no absolute no way that they're going to say they're going to go somewhere and then they're just going to beeline it straight for there, you know? So I knew that was wishful thinking. I was also kind of LOLing because in the last episode, you were asking me so many questions about Bloodraven. You're like, what did you think about him in this story? Like, what do you think? Why wasn't he there? Blah, 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 blah.
And then you start reading this and you're and like wait, okay. Why do we have this exposition about Bloodraven again?
Really setting me up to be thinking about that for the beginning of this. But I mean, okay, sure, I would love to go to the wall right now. Maybe we still will. But if we're going to go to Eterni, kind of back to our OG, the Knight of the Seven Kingdoms roots, mm-hmm. I'm in. Because Dunk is probably a better fighter right now. He's more strong.
He was, for sure.
He's more confident. He's more powerful. He's more sure of himself. He's got a couple girlies under his belt. And now he can go into this and maybe get them some coin so they can have a smoother ride to the wall. Mm-hmm. So very intriguing about where this might go. Will they then make it to that tourney? I would say there's probably like a 60% chance.
Depends on how much that ferry costs.
Yeah, exactly.
When they went to Dorne together, we didn't see it. It was off page.
Mm-hmm.
And there was quite a transition between the first story and the second story. But this one feels like, judging by the map, they traveled from the coast of the Westernlands around Coldmoat and Standfast, pretty much just northeast, making a beeline toward the Neck to mm-hmm. get through to the north. You know, they've still got a long way to go. Stony Sept is a very important place in the story. A lot of historical events have happened here. Things from just after the beginning of the conquest with like Maegor and right before the Field of Fire and things like during Robert's Rebellion. This was the town he was being passed around in and hidden. And also that awesome Arya chapter where they come into the ruins of Stony Sept and those people are chained up around the middle of the town and Anguy takes them out of their misery with his arrows. We go in and out of this place all the time, but we're just leaving right now, which I thought was pretty funny.
No context.
We spent no time there at all.
No context. No, other than Dunk saying at some point, can't wait to get out of here.
Yeah.
Like, it's about time we leave.
Mm-hmm.
So I had similar thoughts of we're in a storied place and we got no information. But it's the same thing with Dorne. It's like we would have loved to learn about whatever they were getting up to in a place like that where, you know, a new perspective on.
At that time, too, in that time period, we don't get a lot of it. Mm-hmm. Even Fire Blood, it's not a lot of dialogue, a lot of like, sweeping narrative about what's happening there.
We've and like cool what it looks like.
Boots on
like,
the ground.
Yeah, we already know what it looks like. You know, we already know where it is on
like,
the map.
We're seeing it through certain perspectives in Aswath proper.
Right.
You know, like we're seeing Darkstar on the edge of a dune.
Uh-huh.
So it's, I don't know, I'd like to see the nitty gritty of it, like through Dunk's perspective.
Oh, completely.
Ed's perspective.
Exactly. Like some real heartfelt narrative instead of. Kind of like you're saying in Fireblood, like we're just getting a
it's probably for the best, though. I think that's what we're supposed to feel like. I don't know. I think it's supposed to feel like it's another place when really it's just the southern place with a different climate.
Sure.
Different vibes.
Sure.
But yeah. So I think it helps a little bit with the mystique of the story. So maybe that's part of the plan, make it mysterious for us. So really no time jump, I think, other than travel. It seems like they have, you know, their supplies laid out. I love that opening one of the opening paragraphs describing all of their tools. And everything seems like it's in its place and they have exactly what they need. They're taking care of each other and their animals in the right way.
Mm-hmm.
Eggs named his horse to match the scheme of Thunder Rain and Maester. The vibes
so
are good.
Cute.
And in just a cool Hedge Knight fashion, like you were saying, the story doesn't start to unfold in the storied place. It unfolds on the side of the road.
Mm-hmm. It's like dirty.
They're hiding in a bush. It's exactly what you would think it would be. It's almost too humble to be the last Dunkin' Egg book that it didn't jump forward in time or that we're not at a place like the Wall, that we didn't like sort of finish it up there.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems to me, I don't want to say that point because I don't want to spoil what's ahead. But it's the way that the Cold Moat Standfast tale fits in between these two, I think is really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, completely. Especially, I mean, just from my inkling based on the vibe of this chapter, that feels like such an interesting random detour between.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, what is shaping up to in my mind. I have no idea what's happening, but just based off of context clues, the book previously to me. What did we need to learn from that? Or what did we need to understand from that either now or in the future?
That's more important than this, for example.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's more important, but I think it probably couldn't have happened anywhere other than a cloistered place like that. That's sort of far away from a bigger town.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to find those points on a map when I was plotting how far they had traveled.
I know. I was doing the same thing. I was doing the same thing. I was like
zooming in and out.
Yeah, it was.
So these are, you know, not only lesser houses, but super lesser places that are far away, or Cold Moat and Sandfast are far away from larger towns,
mm-hmm.
which is part of the reason why all that mess got up to what it did.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a smaller con instead of the biggest. Like instead of a Comic-Con, like shit might go down at a smaller one.
Right. It was making me think about, because Dunk at some point about halfway through our reading was musing to himself about how he had been through so many, because he couldn't figure out what that shield was with the orange shield with three castles.
Mm-hmm.
He can't remember where he's seen it or what he knows about it. And he's thinking to himself about how he's been in and out of so many castles and so many lands and been with so many people over the course of his career. And so how many of those Checky Lion situations had he gotten himself into before we get to this point? But
and then these are Checky Lion brothers running by, riding by them.
Right. So
I loved how they were described racing with their cloaks blowing in the wind. Just how much work goes into creating such a comfortable travel environment for these lordlings. It's cool having that level of a retinue. You're literally traveling with cooks.
Right.
You have full people that are there just to take care of your horses.
And the point is to be loud. What did he say? I need to read that.
Only lords
because,
are that loud.
Yeah, only lords are that loud. Because it's like they've got this luxury across the board.
Uh-huh.
They
just
can make as much noise.
Yeah. And if anyone's on the side of the road hiding, you're like, I might just shoot you.
Uh-huh.
We probably could. We could probably get away with it.
All right. Hmm. It was pretty cool. It was pretty cool the way they rolled up like that. And also, I mean, for all of what Dunk and Egg have been through, they still have to hide in the bushes just in case.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's got a random person's shield. And his shirt's off, and they're looking rough. And he's feeling
so
self-conscious.
It's so funny how much being shirtless, it really destroys your like trustworthiness to people around you. Even if it's hot outside, even if there's really, it's like, if you're not hurting anyone by having your shirt off, but there's just something about it.
Mm-hmm. At least he had his shoes on.
Yeah, he had, Yeah, he might have been served at a local tavern with his shirt off, but if he had his shoes off too, they would have turned him away for sure.
Right.
So when they're riding out of the gate at Stony Sept, this scene went down and I wanted to read it. He squinted. Wait, I know that face. Talking about the head up on the spike. By the way, the illustration for this was so cool. It was a nice long angle, like not close, and it showed, it was from a lower angle, and it showed the head way above them, and it was just them two riding serenely out of the town by themselves. And really all the illustrations that Gary Gianni has made for the Mystery Knight so far have been probably my favorite mood setters of these three books so far. Just the energy of them riding out of town, I think, will definitively be the image of people's head that have read these books. I think that's probably like what they're imagining when they're imagining the TV series. Like when you imagine the Hound and Arya, you kind of just imagine them on their way somewhere, mm-hmm. right?
Like the momentum of that, yeah.
And how Dunk's or Egg's straw hat is flopped, mm-hmm. and how Maester's wearing it too, and it's flopped down as well. And they're just kind of like weather worn a little bit traveling together. Those illustrations really captured it.
Remember? Okay. Remember we were reading the first one and I saw my first picture of Egg with the straw hat and I was like, who is that girl?
He squinted. Wait, I know that face. You do, sir, said Egg. 3 days ago, the hunchback septon we heard preaching against the Lord Bloodraven. He remembered then. He was a holy man, sworn to the seven, even if he did preach treason. His hands are scarlet with the brother's blood, this was the septon, and the blood of his young nephews, too, the hunchback had declared to the crowd that had gathered in the market square. A shadow came at his command to strangle brave Prince Valar's sons in their mother's womb. Where is our young prince now? Where is his brother, sweet Mataris? Where has good King Daeron gone, and fearless Baelor Breakspear? The grave has claimed them, every one, yet he endures, this pale bird with the bloody beak who perches on King Aerys' shoulder and caws into his ear. Those are strong words. Mm-hmm. The mark of hell is on his face and in his empty eye, and he has brought us drought and pestilence and murder. Rise up, I say, and remember our true king across the water. Seven gods there are, and seven kingdoms, and the black dragon sired seven sons. Rise up, my lords and ladies. Rise up, you brave knights and sturdy yeomen, and cast down Bloodraven, that foul sorcerer, lest your children and your children's children be cursed forevermore. And a couple sentences later, Dunk's thinking, every word was treason. Even so, it was a shock to see him here with holes where his eyes had been.
Those are pretty powerful words, though, to say. Regardless of how you may feel, I feel like those are quite the accusations to make against a man. And listen, it is Bloodraven. But times are tough. Like, they're really going, that's what was he saying through? I mean, all their faves are gone. Mm-hmm. They're coming out of this era of peace and abundance into the opposite of that. They've got drought. They've got the roads aren't safe. They've got a lot of stuff going for them. And there's this creepy guy who is a kinslayer, which is pretty much the top of the sins that you can ever commit.
And
ever.
He looks weird.
And he looks weird.
He looks
so different.
Weird. And he seems to not care about how weird he looks.
He does it on purpose.
He does it on purpose.
You know?
Yep. He cosplays as Johnny Depp mm-hmm. full time. Mm-hmm. He really commits to the outfit.
He lets his eye socket just go.
Again, he's got that stuff on his face and on his neck. That doesn't look cool. Mm-hmm. He plays with birds. And he seems to be the only one benefiting from all this chaos. Mm-hmm. He just keeps rising the ranks, mm-hmm. calling in King Aerys' ear.
And anytime somebody speaks out against him, they're gone.
Yeah, but if it was someone like Dick Bean, you know, that was talking about it with an accent, a common accent, it would be like, okay. But this is a septon at, you know, a pretty big crossroad area, the Stony Sept. A lot of roads pass through Stony Sept. So I think this is quite an official person to be like saying, or your children's children will be cursed if you don't like now praise another guy that's across the sea.
Especially as the religious leader.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, exactly.
He's quite official.
That's his job, is to bring people to
a common thought about stuff. But usually it's like religious, you know,
right.
Usually it's related. Well, I guess in times of peace, then you can invoke the gods to sound cooler than everybody else.
It's interesting because Dunk and Egg kind of disagree on what his punishment should have been.
Yeah.
Dunk feels like it went a little far, and Egg was being too much of a little princeling.
Yeah,
and
Egg was like,
was saying,
he was talking mad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got to keep the people down. I get it. I mean, I feel like Bloodraven has everything going against him, even though he continues to, like you said, he's the only person benefiting.
Mm-hmm.
He's got eyes everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to keep the people in line, I guess, somehow. And so, especially if you're going to have somebody who's like a leader.
Well, you just got to control the weather and learn how to stop a viral infection.
Right.
And then maybe we won't bark about you in the streets.
Or you could just be human, you know, and cool for 15 minutes.
So dress
and everybody
more
could see. And then they're like, maybe that guy's not so intense. Maybe
right.
he is a kinslayer, but he's not a sorcerer. Maybe he's just more of like the Jaime Lannister type of guy.
Yeah,
who
also attracted a lot of ire because of
for sure.
his whole deal.
But nobody saw him as like
the reason
or having magical powers.
Sure.
You know, I know that there's lots of reasons why Bloodraven has that surrounding him and mm-hmm. not just because he was a kinslayer, but
simpler times as well.
Yeah, it's interesting to me. So, also when they talk about him, Dunk is kind of thinking about, like, okay, so what else are people saying about Bloodraven? He says, some claimed the King's Hand was a student of the dark arts who could change his face, put on the likeness of a one-eyed dog, even turn into mist. Packs of gaunt gray
That's
wolves.
That's awesome. The mist
hunted,
is good.
Yeah. Hunted down his foes, men said, and Carrion Crows spied for him and whispered secrets in his ear. Most of the tales were only tales. Dunk did not doubt. But no one could doubt that Bloodraven had informers everywhere. And we know that people can change their face, so.
Yep. And there's theories about the mist as
mm-hmm.
well. But I would argue that the mist stuff seems to be, like, more connected to the Weirwood Network,
mm-hmm.
if that's a thing.
Yeah.
And wouldn't Bloodraven really only be able to do that once he got to the tree? So maybe this is a bit of a little hint in a certain direction,
mm-hmm.
or it's just something to annoy all of us, like, a little
sure.
bit, for, and to read a little bit too much into it, that it literally just could be a network of informants.
Well, we've seen, again, in our day, with Littlefinger.
That it seems like it's more, but it's actually quite not.
Yeah,
same with
just,
Varys, too.
Right, yeah, with Varys. Like, they just have a lot of people that hit him up.
Sure, but then there was that crazy voice that Varys heard when his private parts were being...
True,
were
true.
Being sacrificed.
True, true. But still, there are ways to...
there.
There are ways to kind of, like... And we've been having this conversation through this whole reread of Bloodraven as the man versus Bloodraven as the myth and the legend.
Mm-hmm.
There's ways to rationally look at his powers. I don't think that it takes away from his abilities if it's more straightforward, because it's still working really well.
I'm with you. But then I know that he goes and spends so much of his time to get to that tree. And it's there for some reason.
Right.
And took Dark Sister with him.
For sure.
So it's like...
There's definitely something else. There's definitely other... For sure. But, you know, it is interesting.
Yeah. Well, if the Septon is doing that, and Stony Sept, again, not in a smaller town, something that's properly shown on the map. If he's doing that, and a couple of days later, his head's being put on a spike, suppose, or I would assume, be on command of Bloodraven or someone that has Bloodraven's back, like didn't even send it up the chain, just acted.
Yeah, he like
on
sends
his will.
A picture of it. He's like, look
yeah.
what I did for you.
Yeah, a sketch of it.
Yeah.
Raven carries it. Then 16 years since the first rebellion, things seem to be getting a little bit more serious,
mm-hmm.
is what it feels like,
mm-hmm.
if it's gotten to that point.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that judging by the first two books and this being the last one, we can guess that that's going to be a part of this story.
And because you keep asking me about
because
what I
keep
think
asking
about,
you about
it.
It. Yeah, so contextually, it seems like we're experiencing this period of history through Duncan Egg's POV while simultaneously like learning lessons on how to be a more effective knight and to be a better leader.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, again, this one didn't jump a bunch in time forward, so we can gather that this is important.
Mm-hmm.
This time period and the crux of Blackfyre Rebellion number 1 and 2 is mm-hmm. pretty important to check out. So I'm gonna be paying attention. Here's a little bit of extra context that George threw in the story at the beginning of the Mystery Knight, published after it wasn't they weren't all published together. So during the 2010s, this was like served as the refresher, like the beginning of every book in a series, like sort of recounts half of the story from before, at least
right,
the notes
right.
of it in a really nice long buttoned up paragraph. sometimes it feels a little bit extra, but I bet that every editor's like, you got to have that in there. This is that. And I think it's one of the most buttoned up accounts of the history so far. For 200 years, the realm had been ruled by the descendants of Aegon the Conqueror and his sisters, who had made the Seven Kingdoms one and forged the Iron Throne. Their royal banners bear the three-headed dragon of House Targaryen, red on black. 16 years ago, a bastard son of King Aegon IV named Daemon Blackfyre had risen in revolt against his true-born brother. Daemon had used the three-headed dragon on his banners, too, but he had reversed the colors, as many bastards did. His revolt had ended on the Redgrass Field, where Daemon and his twin sons died beneath a rain of Lord Bloodraven's arrows. Those rebels who survived and bent the knee were pardoned, but some lost land, some titles, some gold. All gave hostages to ensure their future loyalty. Not a word of the Checky Lion in there.
Unfortunately.
We got a slight reminder of Lucas Longinch, and the way that Dunk thought about it, having just replaced his shield, like made me feel the time pass even less. I was like, this could almost be the next chapter in a longer book off of The Sworn Sword. But yeah, no Checky Lion. Just out the window. Probably never to be pointed out on a map. Probably never to be mentioned again.
Other than by you.
Other than by... So I just want to say to everyone listening and to you, Hannah, RIP to the Checky Lion.
Mm-hmm.
I can't wait for the day that we see Standfast on screen and that beautiful mustache billowing in the wind and those conversations heading through Watts Wood, thinking about the future.
Let us all stand up and salute when that happens.
A moment of silence, please, for the Checky Lion.
Who knows? Who's to say he's not going to come back? Maybe we'll see him again. But again, I know I just already said this, but... Okay, so we were there for a whole book, and now we're going back into the tourney vibe. So, interesting.
Well, against Egg's will, what if Egg talks him out of it?
That's true. He might. Because I don't know if it's a good idea necessarily, but this mystery night seemed like he really made Dunk think and really intrigued him. And he can't shy away from the opportunity to get some quick cash. So and to get revenge as well.
Yeah, that was
as soon as he realizes what's going on.
Yeah.
He's silent for a while, and he's like, revenge. So.
I think that that's going to play out so well on screen, the riding away and him just considering it in silence for a while and then being like, so what do you think about it? He's like, I don't think you should do it. And he's like, well, I would be a lot better at the melee. He's like, do you think there's going to be a melee at a wedding?
That's not how it works, bud.
Yeah, no. So funny.
It is so funny. I really enjoyed, I mean, I always enjoy kind of like their back and forth banter, but there's so much space for Dunk to think things through in these paragraphs. And like, we get to feel the weight of it. And like you said, we can feel his like mind turning as he walks away from this pretty wild encounter. Like, it was pretty chaotic, I would say, with all the different kinds of energies coming at him.
Yeah.
Like you said, they're hiding in the bushes. They get called out and they're like, hey, show yourself. And then we get all of these extremely different personalities coming at them at once, arguing with each other, and then just questioning Dunk for all he's worth within an inch of his life.
Basically, like, calmly threatening him that we could take away everything that you hold dear to you right now. We could eat your horse.
Right. Nothing matters.
Just say that you're an outlaw.
We don't care that you're tall.
But it's cool.
He has money. He has... skill, he has history, but yeah, none of these people seem to care about anything. And one thing I wanted to bring up, George is so good at naming the bad guys,
because
you can tell immediately who, like, think about
what
Bennis,
their body type,
you know,
is
their body type and just their name of Gorman or Gormy. It's like, okay,
Gormy Peak,
we're not gonna like this guy at all. There's absolutely no way. And so that just made me chuckle to myself, because I feel like George does such a good job of naming the villains, so you can immediately know that this guy is going to try to give us trouble.
Or like someone that's not going to matter. Lord Butterwell.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Okay. I already know your personality, dude. How old's your wife going to be? So what did you think about Dunk's read on the situation? I thought his read was good. I was like... The way that he was like, I can't roll with you guys. He was imagining him setting up camp and pulling out his meat. They're basically leather strips that they have to wet down before they can chew on it, versus these people that are literally traveling with like nice pots and pans and really good bags and crazy, crazy extra clothing. When this guy's wearing half of an outfit, I thought it was fair. It might seem like something that like is small-minded and like maybe he's intimidated by the wealth or whatever, but I thought it actually was a pretty fair read in the situation, especially because the guys were having so much fun, mm-hmm. thanks to John the Fiddler. It's just like they sort of had the whole package. Like that's the kind of crew that you want to ride with to the tourney if you guys have to go to a wedding together. It seemed like a pretty fun time.
It definitely seemed like a fun time.
Not a lady in sight either.
Yeah,
so
but,
probably
yeah.
a really good time. Yeah.
I was about to say, yeah, but...
a nice break.
Whatever. I completely agree, but there was something, and I'm looking for it now, but at some point, he thinks to himself, like, this doesn't happen. People like that don't ask guys like me
right.
to participate with them mm-hmm. and to come along. And there's no way that they just like my vibe
I
because
think, right,
clearly
right.
they don't.
That's what I was
they just
at.
Want to fight me.
Sure.
You know?
Some of them do.
Some of them do.
But like they knew Gorman Peak and Lord Alan Cockshaw, they knew that Dunk was kind of cool, I think. And they knew the egg was kind of cool.
It's because he's tall. That's all.
Yeah.
That's it.
He's
they're like,
different
this guy's
because
huge.
Of it. Yeah.
So can we have Adam? Like, how good is he? They're
right.
knights. They want to fight.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so I can see them being intrigued by this random guy on the road who they're bullying a little bit and his little squire.
Yeah, if you had like a weak chin, they probably would even stop.
Totally.
They just rode by
exactly. Like, eh. But he's the kind of guy you can probably knock around a little bit. So let's bring him along with us so
right.
we can make fun of him
right.
and have even more fun while right. we keep going.
And
so.
Then everyone gets drunk, be like, you know what? I actually like you.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So, but yeah, I totally agree with you. He had such a good read on the situation. And as always, I feel like Dunk converses well with people. Like, he's just very good about getting himself in and out of these types of situations unscathed for the most part.
Mm-hmm. He must be very handsome.
He's just tall.
Yeah. I think the egg's better at talking, by the way. I actually highlighted this section because there was the first interaction where Dunk was the main speaker, and then John the Fiddler and Gormy are back from, and Cockshaw are back from their sprinting.
Mm-hmm.
Like I guess it's Peak was the first one who stopped, and then Cockshaw and John the Fiddler came back. And then one of them asked, who are these brigands? Asked the rider on the bay. And just what a mean thing to say. Who are these two brigands?
They can hear you.
Egg bristled at the insult. So Egg hadn't spoke yet.
Yeah.
But he just spoke up without being invited to. That princeling coming out yet again. You have no call to name us brigands, my lord. When we saw your dust, we thought you might be outlaws. That's the only reason we hid. This is Sir Duncan the Tall, and I'm his squire. Come on now.
That's nice.
Shut him down.
That's nice.
They ignored him, obviously.
That's a good squire, though.
But I think that raised the profile of mm-hmm. them, for sure. It made him a little bit more interesting. And so the vibe was John the Fiddler, who had a surcoat and had a cool logo of two fiddles and two swords that not even Egg recognized, mm-hmm. was the one that was like, nah, this is like another level of interesting. You guys are getting like boring racing on the way to the wedding. I think that this crew could be someone to bring along. What do you think about bringing them along with us? And they were like, no, these dudes don't have any money or anything.
Right.
We don't even know if he's actually a hedge knight. Mm-hmm. It doesn't even matter. Let's go. I'm bored. Let's mm-hmm. keep going. And Dunk obviously thought the same thing. What do you think about it?
I get the energy of why they would probably want him to come along. And I can only imagine the types of people that they're meeting on this road. Because they're like, are you going to the wedding too? Like, I bet they're passing through people who are headed that way. And it's probably kind of fun to
older
hang.
Older lords, boring.
Yeah,
young.
But it's like hang for a night, like meet random people and then keep going on your way. And everybody's doing the same thing, you know? And so you kind of have this like shared experience. So I get the energy of like extra, at least from this John the Fiddler's vibe of like, oh, he's not going. Like, there's just, like, extra merriment going on.
Mm-hmm.
Like, have you ever been, like, I went to a football game from a college team, and I got on the airplane, and everybody was going to the football game.
Mm-hmm.
And so the vibes were extra high on the airplane because we all had our gear on, and we were all going to the football game. So I'm reading into it like that. Like, so I'm more down to talk to the guy next to me on the airplane if she's got a T-shirt on for my team.
Right.
And we're going to the same place versus a normal life when I got my AirPods in and I don't want to say a word.
Mm-hmm.
And so it kind of has that energy of, it's a wedding, like, let's go. So I thought that was pretty fun.
So Peak and Cockshaw, not only is Peak a murderer of Roger Pennytree, who we like. It doesn't even matter if the spirit's high. They don't want to be involved.
Right, because they're mean. Because they're bad guys.
They're bad guys. No. They've been around longer. They've probably been to a ton of these weddings. Right. Like, it's not going to amount to anything. Let's get in and get out, do our business.
It's kind of, I liked that there were so many personalities coming to a head at once on the side of the road. And so that was intriguing to me. Obviously, the fiddler is supposed to be intriguing to us because he's dressed differently and it kind of catches Dunk's eye. In a confusing and interesting way. And then we get this understanding that Gormy has this relationship with Dunk's teacher and Dunk's, you know, basically dad. And so, interesting group of people it's kind of come across.
It's a pretty modern exchange that went down through the mechanics of horses and helpers, like serving people. And the setting being like bushes on the side of a dusty road.
Right.
Which I love stories set in the medieval context, always have since I was a kid. But, you know, they're often like, there's a lot of deep accents and like weird stuff being said that doesn't make a lot of sense. There's like I'm thinking of like Friar Tuck and Robin Hood, like him arriving and being, you haven't seen Robin Hood, but there's this guy who's like going through the woods and they're robbing this dude. And he ends up being this like really, specific character, trying not to give any of the plot points away, but he's so specific that the situation turns into something else. And usually it's always, even in like Lord of the Rings, like you meet Tom Bombadil and it's a very fateful encounter. This seems like not a fateful encounter. This seems very normal, but set in the fantasy environment. And I think it's really neat because of that, because it feels like you said, like being on, it's a modern exchange. It's like being on an airplane. It doesn't matter. But in these days, it's like, usually, like I said, depicted in stories, like it does matter because it's life or death generally always. But it's nice to get a peek into the world where it's not life and death. I mean, it was life and death just in The Sworn Sword, you know, like when we rode up to the dam, it was like, God, Bennis, you had to cut this guy in the cheek.
Yeah.
Now all these dominoes have to fall and this turns into some big thing where we're using big words and thinking about, you know, sending a letter to the king basically to have action be taken. But this is just not that big of a deal.
But it always starts out that way in this series. True. Like, it always just feels that the stakes are low. Mm-hmm. And then come to find out. The stakes are not low.
Well, let me have this moment. No, this completely. Part one for now.
That's what makes this series so fun and interesting, is that sometimes it does feel like the stakes are low. So,
even though a guy's head was cut off that we just knew a couple days ago.
You know, a lot of heads get cut off. True. And it's, a lot of people die. And it's
always there.
Yeah. So, I totally agree, which makes it so good. But at the same time, it's like, okay, this book is called The Mystery Knight. So who's going to be the Mystery Knight? Dunk, who has no shirt on, or John the Fiddler, who...
That's a good question.
...is like, looks really rich and like dressed really well.
And everyone was listening to him.
Yeah.
And he didn't have a recognizable like seal. You
right.
know?
So he seems pretty mysterious, if you ask me.
Yeah, he's pretty mysterious.
So...
The no shirt thing, though, I think puts Dunk in the same category. And also him being that tall. Yeah. So right now, I think that's why they're like having such good chemistry.
Yeah.
Really good chemistry, awkwardly enough. Here's a quote that just an exchange with the fiddler where I think it's pretty clear. He's like, all right, these guys are boring. It's like you said. His sort, the fiddler laughed. What sort is that? The big sort? Look at the size of him. We want strong men. And then he says, young swords are worth more than old names. I've oft heard it said.
Ooh.
And by fools, you know little and less about this man. He might be a brigand or one of Lord Bloodraven's spies. I'm no man's spy, said Dunk, and my lord has no call to speak of me as if I were deaf or dead or down in Dorne. Yes!
Plus, you know, I have egg with me.
What a diss, dude.
So if you want to talk about having secrets or something...
Yeah,
I've
I'm
got
not
the
a spy.
Biggest secret of the realm with me right now, right here.
Yeah, I am a spy for the king.
Yeah.
We're spying on you right now.
Yeah.
But if he's saying that he's one of Lord Bloodraven's spies, that means these guys are probably against Egg's family.
True.
Or at least their reign.
True, true. But still, you know, Dunk is connected to power pretty strongly. So.
Right, but like, it's good. It was talked about at the beginning that it's good that they're hiding Egg like this.
Yeah.
That he's hiding Egg so well, because it seems like we're right in the middle of after that Septon getting his head cut off, and then these really happy loud lords seem to be against them as well. Like, this is a good time to keep the hat on and to keep the head shaven.
For sure.
And it's just becoming clearer and clearer. Like,
for
he's
sure.
probably going to a whole nest full of people that don't want the king to be the king anymore.
But even
Blood
still,
Raven gone.
Not liking Blood Raven, I think, is probably more of a universal thing than just
right.
the anti-establishment vibe.
Sure.
Just because of how weird he is.
Yeah.
Or... not weird. I feel bad saying that. More, he just has these creepy vibes.
M'lady.
You know? Yeah.
yeah.
So, I would say everybody is probably not really Blood Raven's biggest fan, but I see what you're saying.
Just openly talk about it too.
Yeah.
And just after riding past someone who's lower born but still not quite small folk,
mm-hmm.
to riding past their head being cut off for saying a much more extreme version of that, but still, like, they don't know these people and they still said it's Duncan Egg.
Mm-hmm.
They're literally talking to a Targaryen right now.
Right.
So they're making the mistake that they could be making. They're literally making that mistake, saying it to the wrong person.
Right. That's true. That's true. That's interesting.
It is. And so what do you make of the Fiddler being so interested in Dunk? The first thing that came to my mind is, like, this guy wants to have sex with Dunk.
Really?
Yes.
Interesting.
That he likes Dunk. Did you not get that vibe? He's like,
no.
Look at the size of him. He said, "I what was the quote? Here, I have it under damn. I suppose I must chase him down again. That's when they refuse to ride with them. They're like, yeah, you know, maybe. And then one of them's riding away and he's like, oh, I'm going to go chase him down. The Fiddler gave Dunk an apologetic smile. Perchance we'll meet again someday. I hope so. I should love to try my lance on you.
Okay. Come I mean, on. Yeah, a little. Totally.
Right? He wants to try his lance on Dunk.
Mm-hmm.
Young skin Dunk. Mm-hmm. He's big, but he's, you know, he's innocent.
Mm-hmm. Jeez. I didn't read it like that, but now that you're saying, I mean, there's definitely a
think of how innocent Dunk
chemistry.
Was in this whole exchange. He's like, I can't hang out with you guys. And the Fiddler's like, well.
Let me take you under my wing.
Yeah, he's like, you should come with us. You can eat with us. You can dine with us.
You
and
can
maybe
sleep
I'll
with
get
us.
You drunk.
Yeah. Maybe
tell me he wouldn't talk like this to a lady traveling with her like sworn sword. Say that she's got like five men with her and they see this lady on the road and they're like, are you coming to the wedding? You should ride with us.
Right, right.
That's exactly what they would say.
Right.
And if she told them no and all that, they'd part
they'd
with the flirting
oh.
vibe like that. That's
yeah.
what they would say.
True.
And that's what he's doing to Dunk. And I'm like, oh shit. Like Maester turns his head. He's like, ugh. Like during the TV show, he's got his hat. And he looks at the Fiddler. And he's like, okay.
Uh-huh.
Kind of forward. Usually we're the ones doing that.
It definitely was forward. The whole thing was forward on his part because he was trying to get him into his whole deal without knowing anything about him. And so... yeah, you could definitely read it that way. He's also just, like, the vibes are high. He's like, come with us. You seem fun.
Okay. So you're... okay, yeah. That's
my
the two
read,
differences
yeah,
between
exactly.
us.
The difference between... that's...
oh, well, he's trying to get a dog's pants right now. You're
yeah.
like, he just thinks he's a cool guy.
Yeah. He wants to fight him in a fun way. Yeah.
That's good. So. He wants to try his lance on him.
Mm-hmm. His sword.
Yeah, just his sword.
Mm-hmm.
Sword's not a euphemism. It hasn't been hinted at in many different ways in this book series for
yeah.
the last 30 years.
Not in my Christian home.
Okay, got it.
Yeah, but it makes sense. There's chemistry there, for sure. And so, I mean, that's where...
Dunk's intrigued.
He was... Exactly.
If Tumblr was around right now,
mm-hmm.
they'd be like... they'd get their hands all over this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there'd be so many, you know, hearts around the two guys.
Oh, for sure.
And like
sure.
a little profile picture.
For sure.
John the Fiddler and Dunk.
He's intrigued. It makes him think twice, and it makes him think... he's trying to say to Egg, or say to himself, I can't remember, we could use the money, you know? It would be nice to go to the wall with some coin in our pocket. It's going to make it a little bit more of an easy road.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess we could go to the tourney, you know? But obviously, if his interaction with those guys hadn't been that good, or his interaction with the Fiddler hadn't been a 10 out of 10, then... he wouldn't be interested in
not
going.
At all. Yeah.
At all.
He'd be like,
so,
these guys suck. There's
yeah,
no point.
Right. But now he's intrigued.
He's intrigued.
So.
Yeah. He's like, how is this? What do you call him? The Knight of the Golden Hedge?
Yeah.
He's like,
yeah,
this
yeah.
guy's a hedge knight. He's doing pretty good for
uh-huh.
himself.
Uh-huh.
He's calling the lords by their first names and nicknames.
He's like, how can I be like this
mm-hmm.
eventually? So will they meet back up with him?
Dunk was picturing himself atop Thunder, riding down that sour-faced old lord with the three castles on his shield. That would be sweet. It was old Sir Arlen Squire who defeated you, I could tell him, when he came to ransom back his arms and armor. The boy who replaced the boy you killed. The old man would like that.
Okay, I take it back.
What do you take back?
That's why he wanted to go.
Okay.
I would say that he
both.
Yeah, maybe this is him justifying it.
Yeah, he's adding more color, I think.
Yeah, he's adding more to justify his actions.
Yep.
So it's not just so he can go hang out with that guy.
Right.
It's, oh, also extreme revenge. Okay, yeah. So,
For Sir Arlen, he rides into battle. Sir Arlen!
Yeah, there's two good reasons there, then.
And Dunk's Egg's rolling his eyes about the whole thing.
Of course. It's got to be fun.
He's like, can we just get to the wall?
Yeah, it's probably not fun for Egg to be in a place like that because he's surrounded by...
people who don't like his family.
Yeah, and he could potentially be noticed in a place like that more so than he would in a place like the Checky Waters. Or
don't
at the wall.
That. Don't you say
even though
waters.
At the wall, though, he would be noticed as well. So I guess there's no really place for him to be able to go where he's, you know, isn't risking the potential of being found out. But
I think that's a good question. Why is Egg so against this potential merriment, this potential frolic? Like, why is Egg excited about just being on the road specifically?
Especially when he wants to use his boot. So it's not like he's necessarily trying to... Dunk is the one that's really keeping me in line.
And he loved the first tournament at Ashford.
Egg
loved it.
Yeah.
He's like a big fan of it.
Because he's a boy. And so the wall is like this storied place that he's heard so many things about. He's probably getting read bedtime stories about... He's a little boy, you know? So,
and a lot of things have changed. His dad, his family have just lost all those people since the first book. So maybe it was just like more innocent back then for him. Mm-hmm. And maybe he's had to harden himself up. And also the people that are directly against his folks or his, you know, they're against Bloodraven. They're against the throne that his family is currently holding. He's not on the rebellious side. He's not a Blackfyre. He's a Targaryen proper. So it's all like he's taken probably the momentum of the conversation changing swiftly in the direction toward another rebellion, probably a little bit more personally than we're picking up. And also, I think after what happened in book one and after what happened in book two, he's probably a little jaded against people interacting with them at all, because it's like we're going to get caught up in some other thing if we get involved in this thing. It's not just going to be as simple as that. I'm thinking that he's thinking probably something along those lines.
It's so true.
And like, what's the possibility that our plan gets thwarted and we can't go to the wall?
Because he wanted them to leave. Wait, did he? Before the fight kind of broke out, it's like, let's get out of here. So, but also a person like Egg has the luxury of being able to flee from situations where a person like Dunk doesn't.
He needs to take this opportunity.
Yeah, he needs to take the opportunity, and B, like, he doesn't have enough resources backing him up to just
give away an opportunity
in and out of things. And so I understand that there are two different worldviews on that front, especially when, I can't believe we haven't talked about this yet in the podcast or in the episode, but when Dunk is reminiscing on when that one time they took a head off a spike
and used it
to chase girlies down, and how long they kept it, and just... It was such
the Flea Bottom Brothers.
Yeah, it was such a stark
look.
Like,
we kept that head. Sorry, I keep interrupting. Go on.
It's totally fine. It was just such a stark look into what his childhood was like, and how, I mean, okay.
That was the worst one.
Boys are gross, no disrespect, but that's...
The girls are the one who'd kissed the head.
Because they had to.
They had to. What are they going to do?
Get hurt. Get their arm twisted behind their back.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
You know?
True. Yeah.
Get an Indian rug burn or whatever those things were called when we were kids.
Kiss the head.
Yeah. But that was some roughness in that. It gave such what I was trying to say is it gave a very, like, stark view of what his childhood was like. I mean, he talks about growing up there, and we have an idea of what that place is like just from knowing that it exists. But to me, a story like that, that's wild. I mean, that could happen anywhere, but it just felt very, like, visceral.
Oh, yeah. They kept the head until the skin turned black and started to peel away from the bone.
Oof.
And my favorite part was not chasing the girls down until they couldn't run anymore and making them kiss the head. My favorite part was when they kept the head so long. I imagine them stashing it somewhere cool and being like, we got the head again.
Mm-hmm.
They kept the head so long that it was unusable. And so the way they got rid of it was they broke into a pot shop and threw it in the bowl.
Yeah.
And think about the time period and, you know, what the tales and the sort of legend of the bowls of brown and flea bottom are. And it's just, it's cool to get this little window and get a very direct example of the bowl of brown being absolutely as disgusting mm-hmm. as you think it might be.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Like
yep.
not just a head. Say if it was a fresh head, there's worse things. Mm-hmm. There's all those amino acids and proteins and blah, 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 blah. I mean, yeah, it's disgusting. And you might get mad cow disease, but the human version, if you keep eating all that neural tissue, but... Sorry, I did the copes, but... But what I was trying to say is it's not just like fresh body parts
right,
of like
right.
someone that was killed. This is a rotting head. Mm-hmm. It's what else... If you put diarrhea in the bowl of brown, that might be worse,
jeez.
But it's about the same.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like either shit or a rotted head. So we now know that that was a thing uh-huh. because they literally did it.
Mm-hmm.
So Dunk is responsible partially for mm-hmm. one of the worst bowls of brown a lot of people ever got.
Yeah, I thought that was a pretty wild story. Does Abe even respond?
I don't think so.
Yeah, he doesn't even say anything.
Yeah, no, he was just reminiscing that he was telling Egg about that.
Yeah.
I like how Dunk said that he was the one that stole the head, but his friend was the one that stole the head off the wall. But you know how you like tell stories and you just change who did what? He thought it'd be, he's trying to impress Egg with, yeah,
uh-huh.
Flea Bottom was crazy. I stole a head off a spike.
I was the one back then.
Yeah. I mean, he caught it. So he was definitely a part of it.
He got in trouble for it. So he might as well take the credit.
Right. And he's just teaching Egg. This is a lesson.
Right.
So, you know, let the context show for what it needs to get the best result out of the tale. Probably didn't learn anything from it. Just keeps getting more brave and brave as far as interrupting Dunk.
Mm-hmm.
Like they just getting closer and closer to being on equal playing field
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
instead of how the dynamic was in book one.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty interesting. So the writing. It's quiet. Egg says, "You're not thinking of entering the lists, are you, sir? Might be it's time." "It's not, sir. Maybe it's time I give you a good clap in the air." And then Dunk is, "I only need to win two tilts. If I collect two..." I love this math. This is definitely boy math at this point. If you're out here trying to hustle, "I'd only need to win two tilts. If I collect two ransoms and pay out only one, we'd eat like kings for a year. If there was a melee, I might enter that. Dunk size and strength would serve him better in a melee than in the lists. It's not customary to have a melee at the marriage, sir. It's customary to have a feast, though. We will have a long way to go. Why not set out with our bellies full for once?"
What an incredible vibe where you know someone's getting married and you can pretty much just show up and eat a bunch of food for days on end.
Mm-hmm.
That's luxe.
And all the ale and wine that you want, and that shit's way harder to find on the road.
Mm-hmm.
At least stuff at that quality, too. So it's like you're a creature out here surviving in the wilderness and you found a berry patch.
Right, exactly. You better fill up your belly.
Right.
His points are making sense. His boy math is coming together. It's going to be a quick in and out thing. It's going
right.
to be no problem.
Listen,
there's going to be no issues.
Two tilts.
No issues.
Even if he loses one,
mm-hmm.
all right? If he wins two, they'd have enough money for a year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and that's just on the way to the wall. Let's go.
They're going to go and they're going to be in and out in 3-4 days, you know? It's going to be smooth sailing. I can't wait to hear Dunk's inner monologue of himself when he's won two tilts and there's and he's like, maybe I'll stick around.
Loses all of his money.
Yeah, right.
It's what you're expecting. Got it. All right, so that was part one. They see the lake and that's where we stopped. So more stuff's gonna go down, but we wanted to end it there. What'd you think?
Loved it.
Yeah.
Let's go. Like we said at the beginning of the chapter, bittersweet because I've been loving this series so far, but we're back into tourney vibes, so maybe, what's his name that you like will be there?
Steely Pate?
Mm-hmm.
Don't you dare.
Mm-hmm.
If only Steely Pate would make a suit of armor for the Checky line. Can you imagine how good that would be?
I don't really know what I want to give my own to. There's a couple things that I'm kind of bouncing around, but I'll give one of my owns to this exchange about when we figure out who Gorman Peak is, because Dunk can't figure it out, and Egg knows the answer. Gorman Peak, the Lord of Starpike. That's down in the Reach, isn't it? Does he really have three castles? Only on his shield, sir. House Peak did hold three castles once, but two of them were lost. How do you lose two castles? You fight for the Black Dragon, sir. Oh, Dunk felt stupid.
That again.
That was so good. I loved that. So I give my own to that. I also want to give my own to outlaws would be quiet or only lords make so much noise. I thought that that was just what a vibe setter for that.
I completely agree.
Owen's there.
Yeah, I love that too. Just, I could tell these are lords.
Yeah.
They're having a good time. Dead giveaway. I have a couple. When the town was well behind them, Dunk cleared his throat and said, bad business cutting off the heads of Septons. All he did was talk. Words are wind. Some words are wind, sir. Some are treason. Egg was skinny as a stick, all ribs and elbows, but he did have a mouth. Now you sound like a proper punchling. Egg took that for an insult, which it was. He might have been a Septon, but he was preaching lies, sir. The drought wasn't Lord Bloodraven's fault, nor the Great Spring sickness, either. Might be that so, but if we start cutting off the heads of all the fools and liars, half the towns in the Seven Kingdoms will be empty. Ouch. Own too. We could spend the night as well, suggested Egg. This is when they were daydreaming about the inn that's near the ferry, and he was asking for a cut off the roast rather than their hard salt beef. Thinking about, you know, if you've ever done a diet before, that's basically what it is. Mm-hmm. Like, you have a warm meal, and then, like, you're, like, days later, you're like, oh, I would do anything for a cut off the roast. We could spend the night as well, suggested Egg. Does my lord want a feather bed as well? Pillows are for princes. Egg was as good a squire as a knight could want, but every so often he would get to feeling princely. Does my lord want a feather bed? Own three. Another word about your bloody boot, and I'll clout you in the ear so hard you'll fly across the lake. I'd sooner swim, sir. Egg swam well, and Dunk did not. The boy turned in his saddle. Sir, someone's coming up the road behind us. Hear the horses? I'm not deaf. Dunk could see their dust as well. A large party, and in haste. Do you think they might be outlaws, sir? Egg rose in the stirrups, more eager than afraid. The boy was like that. Outlaws would be quieter. Only lords make so much noise.
I can't wait for that passage to be word for word, line by line, recreated in the TV show.
Yeah, I want to see the shot, like the perspective shot when they're looking down the road and you can hear them coming.
There's
and
like
the
dust
cloud rising. Yeah, yep. This is going to be good. All right, folks, time to look at Twitter, a.k.a. X and Insty.
Why don't we start with Instagram?
First on Instagram from Nah Mean, you dig? Own to the dead Septon for talking that shit fearlessly and losing his head for it.
Next over on Twitter, we've got Straight Savage Cole, who says, my own goes to how thoughtful Egg is to put his old straw hat on their mule maester, even cutting holes in it for his ears. I'm a big spoiler of my pup, so I bonded with him on that. And then he sent a bunch of really cute pictures of his dog. That's so sweet.
I think he has more.
Then he goes on to say, I want to give an own to George for the beginning of this story that starts much the same way as the Sworn Sword did, with someone dead on display as a warning to others. It also kind of parallels with the start of the Hedge Knight, Dunk digging a grave for another dead body, Sir Arlen.
At least Sir Arlen was buried.
So true.
So Sir Arlen literally had to break him from being the guy who ran around with a severed head to get girls to kiss it, by the way.
I can only imagine what Dunk was like as a
young... Worse than Egg.
Yeah.
So much worse than
That's
Egg.
That's why he likes Egg.
Right. Oh my God, look at this. See, look at this drawing of Maester.
Oh like, my come gosh. On. It's so cute. It's so
the
cute.
The ears sticking out of the hat.
Yeah, obsessed.
From Absolutely Connor on Twitter. Own to Egg, giving his old straw hat to Maester and even cutting out holes for his ears. What a good lad. Another own to a quote from Dunk. I'm no man's spy, and my lord has no call to speak of me as if I were deaf, dead, or down in Dorn. You tell him, Dunk.
Maddie McTrippinball says, shirtless Dunk, and all the low-key flirting of the fiddler
See?
Throws at him. Okay.
See?
I know. That's funny.
Absolutely. Connor puts a gif of SpongeBob. Let me grab my copy.
That was funny.
Thanks so much for submitting your owns for this chapter, everyone. I know that we're going to be going through this a lot more swiftly in 2024, so keep your mystery night handy. We're going to be asking for these owns a little bit more often. And excited to get through this. Sad to get through this. I'm glad that you have finally breached the ground of the last one, so it's no longer a specter hanging in the distance. Mm-hmm. I would ask you more about how you feel about it. We'll just save it for the next podcast. Mm-hmm. Part two, we're going to tell everyone on social media where our next stopping point is going to be. And so please submit your owns if you want. You can also submit owns for this first one. And if we see them, and remember, we will read them on the podcast.
We'll at least give them a nice little retweet.
Well,
you know?
Hell yeah.
So you can find us on Instagram or Twitter by searching for Game of Owns, or you can email us at contact@gameofowns.com.
Special shout out to Travis Cole for his picture of the Checky Lion that he posted on our page. He says, look at that stash. If only I was good enough to animate it so it would quiver. and to Absolutely Connor for quoting some beautiful poetry. I would like to just say here at the end of the podcast, he says, "I have brought truth, justice, and civility to my checky waters." And Jonathan also, who says, "By what right does the spider judge the checky?" And I want to maintain this energy and grasp its power until my dying day.
Mm-hmm. I support you. And now we're going to go to MAGFest. So we'll see you all later.
Bye, everyone.
Hey.